Welcome to PW Grocer's Environmental Echo. I'm your host, Paul Boyce, CEO and President of PW Grocer. This is our monthly podcast, and we're pleased to have a really exciting topic and a very interesting guest from the West Coast of all places. You know, one of our first times we're doing this. It's going to be a very interesting conversation, so I hope all listeners have a chance to listen to this and subscribers. But before I begin, I just want to mention that the best way to get a hold of us is through our website, right? Always, it's www.pwgrocer.com/podcast. If you guys have questions, comments, thoughts, ideas, or any topics you want us to bring up in the future, feel free to reach out to us. We've got an excellent marketing team that is on top of that, and we'll get back to you in a responsive manner. But today, let me get into an introduction to our guest. It's Dr. Tony Pan, as I mentioned, from Seattle. He is with Modern Hydrogen, all right? And this is going to be exciting for me because this is a topic I've been following a little bit, but it's catching on with more and more excitement across the, you know, not only just the United States, but hopefully around the entire world as a potential alternative energy source here. Let me just give you a little bit about Tony's background. He is, well, Tony, you mentioned you're a physicist, but he is the CEO and co-founder of Modern Hydrogen, and they're based out of Seattle, as I mentioned. His educational background includes a BS from Stanford University and a PhD in physics from Harvard, which is out here on the East Coast, obviously. He was awarded national fellowships from Hertz, Soros, and the National Science Foundation, the NSF, huh? Outstanding. And earlier in his career, Tony held several influential positions, such as a strategist at Goldman Sachs and a pro bono consultant at Global Health for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Global Good Fund. He was also a member of the Global Fortune Councils on Energy and Entrepreneurship and an entrepreneur in residence and consulting inventor at Intellectual Ventures. Tony's currently a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And some of his notable recognitions include, successes to being named to Forbes 30 Under 30, the MIT Review and Innovators Under 35, and the Business Journal 40 Under 40. And Tony is also an inventor on more than 250 patents that are pending, which, you know, we could spend several episodes on the podcast probably discussing those. But I do want to welcome Tony on our topic today with the, hydrogen as an alternative fuel source here. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, let's dive right in. You know, let's start with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself besides, you know, we went through some of your education and your degrees and the accolades, you know, but after all this, you know, who's Tony Pan?
Probably the most interesting thing about my background is, so I'm an immigrant, right? I've been in the U.S. 20 years, but the first half of my life I spent overseas. I was born in Taiwan, grew up there, and in Scotland, and also in Korea. My dad was in the Navy. And so I sort of got to see a lot of different parts of the world before I made my way to the U.S. And otherwise, it's pretty obvious from my profile, which is, if I knew my team sent, you're going to say that whole like biography out loud. I would have told my team not to like to cut all like the BS and all the accolade stuff. Those things don't matter. But I'm a professional nerd. If it wasn't obvious, I think I'm a technologist by training. I think the world in a very mathematical and quantitative way. And I'm here to solve problems. That's sort of how I'm wired.
Well, you're in good company when you spent, you know, mentioned that, you know, I'm usually in my nerdly glory when I'm at work myself as an engineer, civil environmental background. So, you know, we get involved with similar, I wouldn't say similar things, but a lot of the similar mathematics with, you know, differential equations and computational fluid dynamics and all that fun stuff. And we're looking at, you know, different uses up for it, but I can relate to you. So glad to have you on the show today. So, you know, we mentioned you are the co-founder and CEO of your company, you know. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about the company, what you guys are trying to do, you know, what's the mission?
So Modern Hydrogen's mission is to make energy both cheaper and cleaner at the same time and do that through technology breakthroughs. And specifically, our technology and product produces clean hydrogen. And we produce clean hydrogen by decarbonizing natural gas, basically stripping the carbon atom out of natural gas. So you're left with both clean hydrogen and then solid carbon that can actually be sold as a clean material for uses in the built environment.
I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. You know, and I've been to your website and I've seen some of the stuff you mentioned. It mentions methane pyrolysis. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly.
That's right.
You know, how did you guys even come up with an idea to get into this? You know, what caused you guys to take a look at hydrogen as this alternative energy source?
With all innovation, the story's really long, but the concise, if there ever was one, story is that we were looking at how can you help reduce emissions from heat, actually. Think high-grade heat. And this is interesting. A lot of people don't think about heat in terms of energy because solar and wind, you're always thinking about electricity, and that's usually, like, in terms of your home bills, that's what you're familiar with. But actually, 50% of final energy demand in human civilization is heat. And so this is one of the granddaddies of decarbonization. And it turns out that there are many applications of the heat, especially as you go to higher temperatures, which people would call high-grade heat. It becomes increasingly hard to solve with renewables. And so one of the solutions there, or while we were discussing this with a lot of, energy equipment and appliance makers, thinks the people who make steam boilers, if you're like a food and beverage company, to industrial furnace that is melting molten mats of steel or glass, right? While we're talking with those equipment makers, I think we got hints of interest of hydrogen, and this was half a decade ago, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, our team had a lot of expertise in high temperature processes, and that's related to pyrolysis. So somehow the invention and the market needs sort of mashed together, and we realized, hey, maybe there might be an opportunity here, and that's how the thing got started.
Oh man, this is, you know, it's fantastic. And you mentioned to me, you know, before this podcast that you guys are a startup company, right?
Yeah.
How did you guys, you know, attract investors and capital and you know, people to just, you know, take an interest in this and decide this is a good idea and, you know, something I want to back? You know, how did you get the investors?
Blood, soil, what's Churchill's quote? Blood, soil, sweats, and tears. it took a while. So we are a startup. We have raised $100 million to date, which I think is we're definitely not like a baby anymore. We're medium sized in terms of startups, probably 70 full time employees and a lot more contractors. And long story short, right, the investors in this category look for a variety of things, but they're all venture investors. They're all making a very risky bet. And so they typically, in order to be returned for the risk that their capital is offsetting, you need essentially a very large addressable market opportunity so that if it works, it really, really matters. So when I pointed out just heat alone is 50% of final energy demand, that's kind of what we're talking about. You can't solve a niche problem. That is very hard and takes startup capital, and then the VCs never gets a very large scale return. But in addition, all our investors are either energy or climate VCs, where there is some kind of strategic value they're getting from Modern being successful. And one of our most famous investors is Bill Gates. And needless to say, he's also trying to save the world at the same time. And so he is measuring us about not just like the market impact, but hey, if this works, how much CO2 can we reduce?
Yeah.
And I think literally Bill has a rule of thumb of he's not even going to touch anything that doesn't have a gigaton CO2 reduction potential. So that's kind of how you have to aim your project. And aim your endeavor to raise money from venture capitalists. But at the same time, right, there's a whole sequence of things. You need to have a competent team. You need to prove out your technology. You need to prove out your market. There's a whole checklist that as your company matures, you need to increasingly prove to the markets and de-risk the investment.
Oh, man, it's interesting. You know, that's the whole business side to this thing is, you know, just boom, mind-blowing at times. But, you know, let's sort of flip the page here and get into more of the technical aspect, right? So, you know, we mentioned what the mission is to make, you know, cheaper and cleaner energy, right? How's it possible? You know, what can you tell us about the process? You know, we mentioned, that methane pyrolysis, which I think you told me is some sort of thermal degradation of methane. Essentially, you're burning methane,
right? That's right.
But what are you using to burn it if you're not using oxygen?
Yeah, so the answer is really hard. That's why we raise that much money, invest that much money into research and development, right? The thesis behind the company and actually investment from these venture capitalists like Bill Gates is essentially to solve climate change. It doesn't really matter if San Francisco decarbonized. Like those folks have a lot of money and they're fanatic, so good for them. They'll pay a lot up front. But even if Europe, bless their hearts over there, decarbonized, if China and India don't decarbonize, it's pointless. And so, or like if Texas or Texas or Illinois, like not the blue states, but like if the heartland don't decarbonize, like it's still pointless. So you really need a robust unit economics so that people decarbonize and use the cleaner solution, not out of any environmental ESG initiative, but because it just kind of makes sense for the wallet. That's ultimately what's going to scale across the world and actually move the needle on climate change. And that's extremely hard. And so essentially doing like 5-10% improvements on old technology is probably not going to get you there. And you need some radical new technology that has a trajectory on a completely different cost curve. So that's a general thesis. Now, specifically for our technology, right? Natural gas, which is our feedstock for producing clean hydrogen, is CH4, one carbon and four hydrogen atoms. So it's 80% hydrogen already. What you don't like is the pesky carbon atom, which when you burn it, produces CO2. And this is one of the biggest fuel sources in the world. And just to give you a sense, in the United States, natural gas is as big as coal plus nuclear plus hydroelectricity plus solar plus wind combined, roughly the same energy size as natural gas. So this is humongous. This is also one of the cheapest fuels in most cases across the country to use. So it's a cheap feedstock. But the issue is, if you remove the carbon and are left with the hydrogen, right? First of all, you had to put equipment to do it, which means that you're adding extra costs. And then you're stripping away the carbon from the hydrogen and we're not burning the carbon anymore. So you're necessarily also losing some energy there because traditionally, if you burn natural gas, you burn the carbon as well. So no matter what, like I'll tell you, like this is less efficient than just burning natural gas. The trick is that when we extract the carbon from natural gas to create the clean hydrogen, the form of carbon that we're extracting makes it a valuable material that is actually worth like 5 to 10 times more valuable versus just burning it.
Oh, wow.
And therein lies the trick. So we are selling our carbon as a high value material additive into the asphalt market.
Uh-huh.
And this is
so we're making roads out of it, huh?
Yeah. And so that's really the trick, right? Like there's no way to do this without adding extra equipment and like spending extra money. So the way you make this all work and make this work for the end customers is the fact that because we are pulling the carbon off as a high value stream, and we're essentially making it's like natural gas is cheap and we end up with two high value products, clean hydrogen and clean high-value carbon at the same time. And that's the way you make the whole unit economics work. And therefore, that's the way you make the clean hydrogen not as expensive as it has to be because we're making money off the carbon.
Oh, geez. This is fascinating stuff. And I'm looking forward to this really taking off. So on the hydrogen side, right, once you've liberated the carbon from it, now you have, I assume, H2, like little molecules of hydrogen, and yeah, maybe probably in a gaseous state. What uses are you guys? What's the end use once you get this stuff? What are we using it for? You mentioned a lot of heating. Is it just strictly for industrial, commercial? Is it residential? What kind of uses are we seeing for the hydrogen once you get that, you know, clean hydrogen, once you get that together?
Yeah, so my company is agnostic in the sense that we produce the clean hydrogen. In fact, most of our customers today are utilities. So they're literally buying our box and then using it to produce clean hydrogen themselves so that the utilities can start offering clean energy using their existing infrastructure. And then it's going into all sorts of applications. But generally, I think people call hydrogen the Swiss Army knife of decarbonization. I think that might be actually too grandiose a term, but it basically points to the fact that it can be used in many applications, specifically where electricity struggles.
Okay.
So my favorite example, actually, just to help people understand why we need a clean fuel, is that today half the nitrogen in your body across all human beings is from synthetic fertilizer. So it's from ammonia, NH3. So today, to make that fertilizer, we need an abundance of hydrogen to make that fertilizer. And that hydrogen traditionally is made from carbon-intensive processes. So if we stop using fossil fuels to make fertilizer today, half of humanity would have to die, starve to death, because we couldn't produce enough food. And this is one example where you would want a clean source of hydrogen, and where it's sort of obvious you can't do that with electricity, not directly. You can't eat electricity from a solar panel. We're talking about chemistry here. And that's one example where you use clean hydrogen. Of course, I've mentioned, heat. We are intending this for commercial industrial heat. I think there are actually other solutions for residential heat where you don't need hydrogen. So hydrogen's too precious to use for residential heat, in my opinion, which I know, like, I'm a proponent of hydrogen, but you still have to, like, you know, weigh your options here. Be smart about this, right?
Hell yeah.
Other applications include transportation. Now, I'm not talking about passenger vehicles. I know Toyota's trying to push this, but I actually think small passenger vehicles will go like electric vehicles, like the Teslas and BYDs of the world. But the issue is batteries are very heavy. So once you go to very long haul distances, essentially you're screwed with using batteries. So you're talking about long haul trucks or oceanic shipping, or think big planes, not like the two-seater planes, but big planes that have traveled long distances. There's basically no hope of electrifying them with batteries. So hydrogen is a contender there. So these are just examples where you would use clean hydrogen.
And is that, and then once we're using it for, like, you know, an energy source to power a truck or a boat or a plane, it's in a liquid form?
In most cases, yes. So hydrogen typically is a gas. And one of the challenges is that to turn hydrogen into high energy density, you do need to liquefy it. And so for most of these applications, folks are considering liquefied hydrogen to be put in essentially tankers. It's actually, not that batteries are going to work, but I would be remiss not to point out, like, there are some problems with that too. All this is very challenging.
Yeah.
Hydrogen liquefies at negative 250 Celsius. It's actually an extremely hard fuel to transport. But sort of the industry is in this case of, if you want to decarbonize, beggars can't be choosers.
For sure. I mean, years ago, my firm, we were looking into natural gas powered cars and vehicles, right? The fueling stations. Yeah. And it did not really take off, you know, and now we know we're still burning methane, natural gas. So you're still producing some emissions, you know, might have been cleaner than, say, diesel or gasoline, but it was still a bit of a problem. So this looks like a great alternative. And I've heard of, you know, hydrogen powered cars and stuff like that. So if we can get it down to that level, I mean, wow. I mean, the sky is the limit here. But one application I've noticed, and we talked a little bit about, is like heavy industry, you know. Where do you see hydrogen or clean hydrogen involved in heavy industry?
Oh, everywhere. So this goes back to that high temperature heat problem. It's interesting. Almost every manufacturing process actually involves heat. It's fascinating. I once wrote an article for the World Economic Forum on just looking at all the different components of a solar panel. At some step in everything where they're making the plastic or the silicon or the wires, there's a high temperature step. You need it for forming. You need it to, like, reduce metals. You need it even to make food, right? Like, think cooking, sterilization. And so the issue is there is no really economically effective way to apply renewable electricity to form high-grade heat. You could, in principle, do it. So today, you can use renewable electricity to form low-grade heats, like the heat you use at your home, which is like 40 Celsius, maybe, right? You're not going to kick yourself for space heating.
Right.
Or hot water, 60 Celsius. You can actually use something that's a magical, wonderful technology called a heat pump. Basically, you use one unit of electricity to produce like sort of three or four units of heat. So there's a leverage effect. And so even though electricity is typically 3 to 4 times more expensive than natural gas because of the leverage effect of a heat pump, you can actually come on par, same price as a fossil fuel to generate that heating. So that works great if you're producing low temperature heat. But basically, physics prohibits that from working for high temperatures. Like, it's laws of universe like make it impossible. You can't do it. Like, it's not even like a matter of invention. You will never be able to do it to create very high temperature heat. So if you're if you're forming glass, I need 1,000 Celsius. Or if you're making concrete, one of the biggest products in the world.
Oh yeah.
Concrete has a clinker step that requires 1,500 Celsius. Like, you're probably burning some fuel. You're not gonna. It's gonna be cost prohibitive to run electricity to do it. And so then most people are burning a fossil fuel today. And basically, we allow them to decarbonize. Let's say they're burning natural gas. We basically strip the carbon out. They're left with clean hydrogen, which they can burn essentially in the same furnace or boiler. You do need to like switch out a few components to make that transition from burning the fossil fuel to burning 100% hydrogen. But it's probably the least invasive retrofit in terms of the system to switch these industrial processes over to hydrogen.
I mean, what you just said about concrete, you know, as a civil engineer, that's one of our, it's like our canvas, right? We build things, a lot of it's reinforced concrete. You mentioned asphalt. But yeah, what you said about, you know, using the heat in the concrete formation or production process, I've read someplace that's one of the biggest, you know, CO2 or greenhouse gas emissions on the planet is just making concrete. So if you guys could put a dent in that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, so just some statistics, right, for folks who don't, I know you study the base, but for our listeners, like, people are so obsessed about electricity, and that's good because it's a big component, but it's still only 1/3 of all human emissions of CO2. Like, yeah. I think, like, a lot of folks don't really grok that electricity is just one piece. And so, yeah, there's things like concrete. Actually, another key, one of the big things that people want hydrogen for is steel manufacturing. Another one that's used everywhere in human civilization. And there, people need the hydrogen both for the energy, but also for the chemistry. So their hydrogen can kill two birds with one stone. It turns out, right, like steel, you can imagine metal manufacturing, molten vats of metal, high temperatures. So you already heard where hydrogen can play a role there. But the other thing you really need to do to make steel is that originally you start with iron ore, which is iron oxide. So to turn iron oxide into iron to make steel, you need to strip away the oxygen atom, right?
Yeah.
You need to pull the oxygen atom away from iron. Today, people use coal. They use carbon to strip the oxygen atom away. And of course, the carbon steals the oxygen and becomes CO2. One of the biggest emitters in terms of civilization. So people want to replace that with hydrogen to steal the oxygen atom and produce, you know, water instead. Then you can have a CO2-free process. So just another example of where you would need a chemical, and electricity can't do the job.
So let me, you know, I'm going to sort of move a little bit here, but is your process, is it involved in any industrial plants right now for, say, producing concrete or steel? Have you guys adapted it for that yet? Have you scaled one up?
Not concrete and steel. Today, our hydrogen is going into, well, actually, sorry, it's, I would say it's just going to industrial plants. I don't think it's concrete and steel. So in one of our deployments, we are upstream of several, we are like at the last gate station in the natural gas grid, which means that the hydrogen is going to several end-use customers.
Great.
Mostly commercial and industrial.
Yeah.
So in that part of the country, I think it's going to be things like paper and pulp mills.
Got it.
Which also require high temperatures. In another case, the hydrogen is actually being used for on-site combined heat and power generator. So I think there's special engines that can run with hydrogen. 100% hydrogen.
Oh, man.
That's being used to produce on-demand electricity on-site.
Okay.
Or things like peak shaving.
So, and you brought up something that was interesting, and you and I discussed this before the podcast, And I think our listeners will appreciate this. You know, they're going to, well, how come you can't just set up a plant and, you know, make this hydrogen and then pipe it to every place that needs it? Whereas your process is, as you mentioned, it's at the end of the line of a natural gas line. What's the reason for that?
I'm glad you asked. This is actually one of the most important things our technology does, which is solving the Achilles heel of the hydrogen economy. I hinted at earlier that, yeah, we need hydrogen, but let's not pretend this journey is easy. Hydrogen is extremely hard to transport. So
yeah,
it's, you either need to turn it into liquid, which I've mentioned, it requires a cryogenic step to negative 250 Celsius.
Oh, man.
Otherwise, if you do it as compressed gas, like the same volume tank of compressed hydrogen has only 10% the energy as the same tank in terms of volume of, like, let's say, gasoline. And so you can see how this is really bad. The best way to transport hydrogen is through pipes, but you can't use existing pipes, not without significant retrofits and modification. Hydrogen is the lightest and smallest element in the universe. Like, literally, there are some materials, like, I think welds in old pipes, where the weld technically is a solid material, but hydrogen atom is so small that it will leak through the solid material.
That's fascinating.
Pass through walls. It's some Harry Potter craziness.
Yeah, no, that's why I wanted you to bring this up and let our listeners know. So, you know, you can't just pump hydrogen gas through the existing infrastructure.
Yeah. So some folks are working on that with, like, but it all looks like you need massive retrofits in existing infrastructure. You can't build new hydrogen pipes, right? Like, to be clear, we know how to do this. There are 2,000 miles of hydrogen pipes in the country. But now here's the trick, and getting to what my company does. 2,000 miles of hydrogen pipes, right? The natural gas grid in the United States is 3 million miles. 3 million versus 2,000. And again, I've mentioned, right? Natural gas is 80% hydrogen already. So we've already got 80% hydrogen flowing through 3 million miles of pipes to the end user across the country. So basically, think of our box as this filter where you add a box at the very end of the pipe, and it's mostly natural gas all the way through, and at the very last step, the carbon gets removed, and you just produce clean hydrogen where it will immediately be used, and therefore you solve this problem with hydrogen transportation and distribution. And the thing that we're most excited about this is really one word: time. Or I guess I could say urgency. Because I don't know about you, but have you noticed how slow the country is at building infrastructure?
It's this IIJA, the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act. You know, we're supposed to see, you know, trillion plus dollars, and it hasn't really started to flow here, in, at least in my state, New York. So, yes, it is slow to move on infrastructure, for sure.
Right. Like, and it's just a scale, right? It took us a century to build all these pipes and grids.
Oh, yeah.
If we have to do a new one for hydrogen, it's going to take a century. We can't wait on that to reduce CO2 emissions. So this is actually what the utilities are particularly excited about us, because they have very, like, right, they have their regulated utilities. They have a gun to their heads from the state saying, hey, like, you have these decarbonization targets. You need to meet this by 2030, 2035, 2050. And they're like, wait, like, it takes 10 years for any new thing to be permitted. We can't build new pipes and grid, like, even the electricity grid, right? They can't build it fast enough. So this allows them to decarbonize their existing infrastructure, stuff that's already underground. That's, like, exists. There's trillions of dollars of existing gas infrastructure in the world. We allow basically the folks to start reducing CO2 emissions from all of that without having to spend a few extra trillion, and being able to do that soon without waiting, like, 20, 30 years to start just building a few thousand miles of stuff.
Oh, man. And the cost, right? All right. I want to thank our listeners today for joining in or listening in here in our first part of a two-part podcast series here with Dr. Tony Pan and Modern Hydrogen, talking about clean hydrogen and its uses. Please tune in for the next one, which will be advertised soon on our website and through all our social media. But of course, if you guys want to get a hold of us, always the website, www.pwgrocer.com/podcast. I'm Paul Boyce, your host, CEO, and president of PW Grocer. This is the Environmental Echo. Thank you for joining us on this episode of PWGC's Environmental Echo. You can download and listen to this episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or by visiting our website, www.pwgrocer.com/podcast. For more content like this, be sure to subscribe to our channel and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode.